That was Kimberly Crenshaw on Letters in Politics with host Mitch Jezerich and produced by Diana Martinez. Janine Jackson hosted the conversation about intersectionality, convened by the African American Policy Forum and Haymarket Books. Special thanks to John McDonald. Professor Kimberly Crenshaw hosts a webinar called Under the Blacklight, the Intersectional Failures That COVID Lays Bare, and also has a podcast, Intersectionality Matters. We'll link to those at our site, radioproject.org. I'm Paulina Velasco. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
Portland.
Hello. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Retirees Union, and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Tonight, I'm joined by my sisters in the struggle.
Hello, I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm retired from the international staff of the UAW out of Detroit. I'm the current vice president of the Oregon CBTU and the president and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute.
Hello, this is Deborah Hall, and I am currently the Secretary Treasurer for the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists and a retiree of the American Federation of Teachers here in Oregon, and also from my local, Classified Federation at Portland Community College. Thank you.
So tonight, our guests are Dr. Rosa Colquitt and Travis Nelson. Tonight, our show is a follow-up of the Democratic Party of Oregon's convention. We spoke to Travis Nelson a few weeks ago. Welcome to our show once again, Brother Nelson and Dr. Colquitt. Thank you for being a first-time guest.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yes, thank you for the invitation.
Sure. First, I would like to congratulate the two of you on being delegates to the Democratic Convention occurring in August. It's still in August, right?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Okay, just double checking.
Everything happening with COVID, you never know what's going to happen. Though,
that's for sure.
You always have to ask when and if.
I know life happens, but sometimes we can't let it get the best of us all the time. So, okay. So tonight we're here to discuss a very special election that took place on June 20th of 2020 as the Oregon chair of the Democratic Convention. You two want to let us know what took place?
Yeah, I'll let Rosa start.
You want us to let you know what took place?
Yeah, as far as that resolution was concerned.
Travis, I want to talk about the actual day that we spent, June 20, in terms of the nomination and the resolutions. But having provided the leadership to construct those resolutions, I think I would like for you to talk about those, and then I'll support that as much as I can.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to proceed, Rosa. So, Tina, on June 20th, we had our delegation meeting for the Oregon delegations group that will be representing our state at the Democratic National Convention. And at that meeting, Rosa and I were elected co-chairs of our delegation after Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley decided to nominate us and step aside for this convention, which happens once every 4 years.
That's great.
Yeah, it's my impression, though, that that position usually goes to, like, a Oregon dignitary. So what changed it in this instance?
You know, one of the major things that I think had an impact on it is really the Black Lives Matter movement in the U.S. and also the protests in response to the killings of unarmed Black Americans. But I think that it's a good idea. I have the letter in front of me. It's very brief, but I think it's a good idea to talk about or to speak about what Merkley and Wyden actually said themselves. So they wrote a joint letter to the Biden delegation that met on June 20 when they announced that they wanted to pass the gavel to two Black leaders in the party, that being, again, myself and Travis. And what impressed me, I really absorbed all of this, they strongly stressed the fact that, and I'm going to quote here, "We must listen more to those who are among the most impacted by racism and by longstanding health disparities. We must listen more to Black Americans," end of that quote. And in asking the delegation to support their nominations, the senators went on to say this: "Their voices are the right ones to lead us through this convention." And then Senator Wyden gave an emphatic statement, "Black lives matter."
Wow.
And so, yeah, and so I think that they recognize that this is the right time, that this was the right time, this is the right moment, that despite the fact that they hold these laudable positions, United States senators, there is a moment when Black voices must be heard. And both of those senators recognized that, and they gave us, as I thank them, for a voice at the table that I can speak for myself and I can speak for others who look like me but feel voiceless. Because of all the things that these U.S. senators can do, they cannot speak to the dreams of Black Americans on the basis of lived experience. They cannot speak to those dreams, those hopes, or their aspirations. So I do feel that it was quite a magnanimous gesture. They didn't have to do it, but they recognized that this is the moment that it needed to be done, and they did it. So I thank them both.
Yeah, and from my perspective, first of all, I want to say how thankful I am to Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley for stepping aside. Like Rosa was saying, they didn't have to do this, and they did. But, you know, I think it's important to recognize that we are now at a point where it's taken the deaths of, going back to Emmett Till, Tamir Rice, Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, and so many more, to finally get to the point in this country where white folks are starting to believe that Black lives should in fact matter, that systemic disparities against Black people in this country, whether it relates to law enforcement, criminal justice, education, healthcare, that those aren't just accidents, or that those disparities aren't just occurring because Black people aren't intelligent or Black people are lazy. It's because we have a system of oppression in this country that's rooted in over 400 years of racism now, that needs to be dismantled, And so I'm honored to be co-chair with Rosa for our delegation to the 2020 convention. And I am very happy to see the awakening of many white Americans.
You know, I just want to throw in on this. This is very historical. You know, I stay kind of involved in the history of Oregon and our past history. This is a really historical moment, and I feel that it needs more press, honestly. You know, because if you look at how Oregon started, I mean, which was not a place for us at all, and now look, we have two black people co-chairs of the Democratic Party of Oregon. Come on, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
History. Come on. Sorry, you guys.
Change is in the air.
Congratulations.
So how do you two feel about the confidence that your fellow delegates have given you in voting you in?
You know, I've received a fair amount of support. I've received an email here and there, a message on social media here and there. It was a unanimous vote. So I don't have a lot of concerns as it relates to the delegation. You know, Rosa and I and Tina, you were part of this group too in 2016.
That's why I'm asking.
I thought I knew where that question was coming from.
We were there in Philadelphia in 2016, where we had a very divided delegation, and luckily, I think in large part to that fool in the White House, we have a very united delegation this time around, and I don't think we have nearly the amount of problems that we had in 2016. So hopefully that unity that we have as a party will be replicated in all 50 states, and we will be able to get Donald Trump out of the White House in November of 2020.
So it's my impression that there have been some changes in how the convention is going to be operated. Is that correct?
That is definitely correct. But before I speak about the virtual nature of how the convention will be constructed, I wanted to follow up on something. This is very important. It's a point that Deborah was making about the fact that we live in a historically white state. We operate in a historically white political party by virtue of the demographics. But this is a point that I don't want the point missed, that we have a delegation of about 46 people. And in putting that delegation together, the Democratic Party of Oregon had to set up what was called representation goals based on the demographics of the different groups, whether it's Black, Latina, Asian American, Pacific Islander, Young Democrats, Latinos, the Stonewall Caucus, the LGBTQ community. And the reason I bring this up is because when Deborah said it's historical, it really is historical. We have in that delegation a sum total of one Black woman, and that person being me. And I think that despite the fact that there is progress, that we have two United States senators that did something so wholly magnanimous, and I don't want to ever do anything to lessen the magnanimous gesture that they held, but I am saying that within this history that we're living through, there's a lot of work for Black Oregonians to move us forward, because we should have had a delegation that has more than one Black woman in a party that is now touting the registration of more than a million Democrats. That number comes to me as very surprising. I think I keep up with these things, but apparently not, because when I read that number in a report from the DPO, I was quite taken aback. Mm-hmm. So I applaud the progress. I'm grateful. I feel very gracious about the appointment and the delegation confirming the senator's nominations. But as Black Oregonians, I don't want us to miss the point that we have work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True.
Just to pick up where Rosa left off, thank you, Rosa, for bringing up the fact that you are the lone Black woman in this delegation. And our delegation is actually going to be closer to about 70 people if you look at everybody who's eligible to go, including all of our elected officials in Oregon. And I do think it's important to also point out, while it is an honor for me and Rosa to be tagged to co-chair our delegation from Oregon, we still live in a state where we've never had a Black governor. We still live in a state where we've never had a Black U.S. senator.
Yeah.
We've never had a U.S. senator of color, as far as I know. Our entire congressional delegation from Oregon currently is white.
Right.
Even if you look in our state legislature, there are no Black women in the Oregon Senate.
Right.
There are no Black men in the Oregon House.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of work to do, and hopefully the movement that's happening in our state and around the country is the beginning of some much needed change.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to take this moment to remind our listeners that they are listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. Here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Our guests tonight are Brother Nelson and Dr. Rosa Colquitt. Thank you again both for coming on and being our guests and making this really special for us.
Awesome.
Real quick, because I hadn't heard this, I want to make sure everybody knows that I am an AFT member, an Oregon Nurses Association member. I work for the Washington State Nurses Association. I am a member of the CBTU.
Yes, you are.
And I'm also a member of Teamsters Local 117. So I just want to point it out.
Represent.
Represent. That's a labor brother.
Man, I don't have all those unions.
Yes.
I have three.
Okay, this is Dr. Terrell. I have a quick question. Could you tell us more about the resolutions and why you felt the need that these two resolutions should be was brought forward?
Yeah. So the Democratic Party of Oregon, at the urging of myself, Rosa, and some other Black leaders, passed two resolutions prior to Juneteenth. One in which the party officially declares the Black Lives Matter, and another resolution demanding justice and honoring the life of George Floyd. I was inspired to really lead and get to work on these resolutions after seeing some Caucasian, well-intentioned Democrats start working on a resolution in which they took it upon themselves to use the name of George Floyd to help in getting their Antifa resolution across.
Oh my goodness.
When I brought
Antifa.
Up...
Sorry.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Antifa. And when I brought up my concern about that action, it was put back in my face that Black folks weren't doing much. So essentially, why are you having a problem with us doing this? Immediately after that, I began to get to work on the resolutions.
Nothing like calling you out, huh?
What's that?
I said nothing like calling you out, huh?
Well, not just calling me out. You know, I knew something needed to be done, and I didn't like the approach that they were taking. You know, I'm a big proponent of, when it comes to women's issues, letting women lead. When it comes to LGBTQ plus issues, letting them lead. And when it comes to things affecting Black community, let Black people lead.
Uh-huh.
And so I checked to see if there were any Black leaders working on a resolution. There was nothing happening actively. So I decided to lead on getting the two resolutions passed. And the DPO resolution, in the therefore be it resolved, the very first thing it says, the Democratic Party of Oregon declares the Black Lives Matter. The next thing that the resolution says is that the Democratic Party of Oregon supports changing systems to dismantle systemic racism. This includes, but isn't limited to, re-envisioning policing and tackling racial disparities in education, environment, healthcare, the criminal justice system, employment, housing, etc. And the Democratic Party of Oregon demands that Black people be included in the discussions and decision-making processes involving causes, consequences, and solutions in the effects of systemic racism on Black lives. And I'm so proud, again, of everybody who joined me in doing this work. And I'm proud of our party for passing these resolutions unanimously. Believe it or not, our party had never passed a resolution in which we stated that Black Lives Matter. So this is official policy of the party now.
Sweet.
And it is, I can't oversize and reemphasize what Travis is saying. As chair of the Black Caucus, I talk probably incessantly is the right word about what we speak and how we speak that really represents the values of the Democratic Party. And so in making that unanimous strong resolution that Black Lives Matter, it speaks to we do value our Black lives, we do value our Black members, and we're willing to take a stand on that. So in that sense, as Travis has spoken, we can't overemphasize the significance of that. And as Deborah says, these are historical moments. This is a historical moment for the Democratic Party, and it just cannot be overemphasized.
One last question is, what are some of the immediate goals of the Oregon Black Caucus? You mentioned several things.
Yeah, I'm real happy to take that question. One of the things, we're pushing some issues. They are a manifestation of the two resolutions, but more than anything else, the Black Caucus takes the position that we will work for a present and future society that respects the dignity of every Black Oregonian. And in respecting Black Oregonians, this includes growing Oregon-based Black-owned businesses and local economies and protecting the land, which is our natural environment. So that's one of the strong positions that we're taking. And also, we are letting folks know, and we're sending out messages. And I'm working on folks to put together various position papers. But one of the things we are saying is that the 8 minutes and 46 seconds, the time that it took for the life to drain out of George Floyd, is really about lives, but it's also about the fact that white America is seeing that there is a curtain that has been peeled back, and that we must recognize we have an incomplete and whitewashed American history of slavery and racism. But more importantly, and the Black Caucus will continue to push this position, there is unequal treatment under the law for Black citizens, meaning in Oregon and throughout the United States. And with respect to where we go in the future, one of the immediate things the Black Caucus is doing is sponsoring a September 2020 Black Leadership Roundtable and Candidate Forum. And the intent of this leadership forum is not to be very general in nature, but to really be specific with respect to Black Oregonians. A couple of the issues, and these are mentioned earlier in the resolutions, we want to know what our candidates, where are they on unequal protection under the law, the denial of civil and human rights for Black Oregonians. We want to hear a lot more substantive discussion and meaningful resolutions to poverty and economic exploitation of Blacks. There needs to be a definitive discussion about inadequate, disparate health care for Black Oregonians. The fact that Black and Brown citizens are dying disproportionately in the COVID-19 pandemic. We want to have a serious discussion about housing and redlining practices with people who say, I'm running for office, vote for me. And also we want to, in terms of another issue that the Black Caucus has put on the table, education, inaccessible, overpriced opportunities for higher ed, or skills training for living wages and better jobs. One of the position papers I was looking through my notes about inadequate health care and also economic inequality, and that is the fact that it takes the wealth of 10 Black households to equal the wealth of one median income white household. And we're going to say that Black Lives Matter and that we are in a moment where we're going to do something substantive to change institutional racism. We have to deal with the disparity in wealth income. And I think that folks who are running for office, when we have our Black Leadership Conference and roundtable, I think that folks that are running for office, we need to hear their voices. We need to hear them talk about that singular issue that the Black Caucus will push. And one other item that's very important, we have 7 issues we're dealing with, but one additional item is the overrepresentation of Blacks in the prison system in comparison to their percentage of the general population. So the Black Caucus is busy. We're gonna stay busy. This is a moment that we have to grasp, and so we're willing to do the work, and we intend to.
Okay.
Gotta be busy.
That's for sure. Well, Sister Terrell, you wanna wrap us up?
I just want to close by saying the Coalition of Black Trade Unions, we meet the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. And since the coronavirus, we have suspended face-to-face meetings and are utilizing our Google Hangouts to conduct our meetings. And our next meeting will be held July 14th, 2020 at 6 p.m. You can contact us at our email address at orctu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, so join us in our evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. And I just want to say I am so proud of you, Brother Nelson and Dr. Rosa. Represent. And anything that my institute, my youthful institute, can do to support you, pick up the phone and call me, and I will bring them over and we'll do what we can do. On your caucus, whatever you've got planning for September, and I hope to see that y'all gonna run for office one
day. So, Dr. Colquitt, you want to?
I'm pushing Travis.
Dr. Colquitt,
whatever y'all need, because I'm a Washington resident, but I'll surely help out.
Dr. Colquitt, do you want to give our listeners information on how to get in touch with the Oregon Black Caucus?
It's really simple. On the web, we're at dpo.org/caucuses/black. I'm pretty sure that's the correct address. Or directly write black_caucus@dpo.org, and that inquiry will come directly to me.
Okay. Well, once again, I'd like to thank you both for coming on our show and for sharing with us this monumental event. And I think Sister Girl was right earlier when she said, we've been too quiet about this. Other folks have got to know of the honor that the two of you have been given. And so, once again, thank you very much for coming on our show. We wish you the best of luck. We may have you back one last time, see how that virtual thing worked out. because in my mind, I think it sounds really interesting. Okay? Well, it's that witching hour, and I'd like to say holla.
Thank you so much.
I am so grateful to be a part of this discussion, Tina, with you.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. In 2006, James Chassie was brutally killed by Portland police. A documentary film about the killing was directed by Brian Lindstrom and produced by Jason Renaud. We'll remember James Chassie, or Jim Jim, as we listen to his parents, friends, and eyewitnesses to the killing from the film Alien Boy, The Life and Death of James Chassie.
My mother-in-law was a nurse, and she says it was the kind of a labor and delivery where the mother or the baby or both would not have survived 50 years ago. And I often think it was a precursor to the troubled life and horrible death that Jim had. He was colicky. He was a very high-strung baby, hyperactive, but he was very bright, very loving.
James had a pretty good childhood from my standpoint. I think he was happy. He got to do a lot of things that he wanted to do. We hiked. He liked that. He liked camping, nosing around in the woods.
He enjoyed school up until the time, I think, that he went to junior high school.
His grades